Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. My name is Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith.
Hello, hello!
We have another special guest. We are taking a quick break from our return series that I'm not really sure that's a return. That was not a planned series.
I was going to say, what's going on right now?
But I'm leaving the door open for a return guest. This is my podcast. I rule with an iron fist. But anyway, we do have a special guest. It's a new guest to the podcast. He's been a good friend of mine for a long time, since my college days. Everyone, please welcome Brian Zinda to the podcast. Brian, hi. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Long time listener, first time caller.
God damn it.
God damn it. That guy.
I love it. No one's done that yet.
If we have any longtime listeners that are not me, like...
We did the Spotify, like, you know, that little wrap-up today. Like, Dean can see, like, how his fans reacted. And it was like, you had 5 people who listened to your podcast more than any other podcast. And Dean was like, one of those is probably me.
So there's that. Like, if you are a longtime listener, drop us a line. Please. Please.
Not that we're desperate or anything.
Nobody's done it yet. And there's a multitude of ways to do that we will go over at the end of this episode. So keep on listening. Keep your dial locked.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I digress. Brian.
Yo.
We have 2 questions that we always ask our guests on the show. The first one is, please give us your life story in the span of a tweet.
So I was born in small town Iowa, acted for my money, and moved to Chicago, and now I work in IT.
Awesome.
Woot
woot! Woot woot! And I play video games probably 7 out of 7 days a week.
That's a lot of days?
That's a lot of days.
I strive for those numbers.
The key, Dean, is to be single and alone.
Damn it!
I mean, you play video games a lot when I'm sitting right next to you.
That is true. I think I went through my umpteenth run of Metroid Dread last night. So
amazing.
It's still
blowing my mind.
I don't want to, you know, drop any bombs or anything like that, but I think it might be the greatest Metroid game yet made.
Oh, that's a power bomb.
Meredith, I know I'm really sexy to you right now, but...
I mean, baby, you're sexy to me all the time.
You got me too, Dean, with that. You got me too.
You're like half chub.
Oh my God.
He made Jesus. A Metroid reference. Swoon.
I just meant that you made me a martini earlier, so, you know, I'm good.
But the thing is there's an item called a power bomb that you can get in Metroid. So
you were going to ask Brian your second question?
Yes, very quickly. So Brian, what is your personal history with video games? And this can be much longer than a tweet.
Okay, so I didn't own my first video game system until the Nintendo GameCube.
I don't believe you.
It's true. I wanted to play video games my whole life, and my parents were like, no. You're going to get addicted to them. You got to go outside them.
They weren't wrong.
No, I just told you I played every day of the week. So they weren't wrong.
Good job, parents. You know, A+ for effort.
So I would have to sneak video games on the bus with kids who would bring their Game Boys to school. Mm-hmm. Or I would go over to my friend's house and I would play. I think the first video game I ever played was Super Mario World 3 on the Super Nintendo. Or was that the Nintendo Entertainment System? It was one of them.
Well, Super Mario Brothers 3 came out on the regular Nintendo.
Is it the one with the tail?
Yes.
That was the first one that I ever played.
For those of you who cannot see us, Brian just did a little tail swoosh with his hips, and it was way sexy.
It was so good.
Meredith, stop looking at Brian.
At me, video game nerds.
It's going to be a new GIF.
So, I hate to say this, but I hung out with that friend just to play video games. We're not friends anymore.
Oh, man.
It's probably because he changed school, so I couldn't be friends with him anymore. Okay. But yeah, then I did. I got to borrow a Game Boy from a kid on the bus.
Okay.
And wow, that's some trust there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
In the early 90s? Jesus.
And I took the Game Boy upstairs into my room after school. I didn't say hi to my folks. I didn't do anything. And I just sat in my room and played for hours. And then the police came to the house.
What?
Because since I didn't say hello to my parents after school, they didn't know where I was.
Oh, and
they're like, well, he didn't come off the bus. We better call the school. And they're like, no, he got on the bus. He got off at his stop too. And they couldn't find me. And
they didn't just go check in your room?
They did. Nope. They called the police and video games got me in trouble.
Like, that's the first thing you do.
I got in trouble.
Oh my God. Okay, Zendas. I was giving you like the kudos earlier, but I gotta say, check the child's room before you call the cops.
So, I couldn't play video games then for a while.
If I could interrupt for just a moment, I want to try and make you feel better,
yes.
Brian.
One, I don't feel bad. I had great parents.
Yeah. One, I got my Game Boy taken away when I was in third grade for playing Mega Man 2 when I was done with an assignment.
In school?
Yeah. I was done with, I didn't have anything to do, but I was playing a Game Boy, so they didn't like that. So there's that. Two, I also got in trouble when I was a kid because I called 911 because I had seen some television show, I think that had 911 in the title. And they were like, if you're ever in trouble, call 911.
Were you stuck on a level?
No, I just called 911. Just to like try it out. And they were like,
oh my God.
911, what's your emergency? And I just hung up.
Oh yeah, they don't like that.
That's scary when someone answers the phone from 911.
Yeah.
Because like I did that once too. Like my sister and I were fighting and like I just dialed 911 quick and hung up. Like, didn't even like wait for someone to answer. Like, I don't know what we were fighting over. And we were both, anyway, they called back. And I answered when they called back and they were like, did you call 911? And I was like, yeah, but it was an accident. And they're like, okay, just you have to stay on the line so that we make sure that no one's hurt. And I was like, okay, sorry.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, those are the nicest operators.
Like, what if you're like having an actual emergency and you call 911 and you get ripped away from the phone?
Yep. Yeah.
In my instance, what happened was about a half hour later, my mom called for me and she was on the back porch with a police officer. And by this point, the police officer figured out what was going on, and let's call him Officer Friendly.
Ironic.
But he was like, listen, I know you just tried it out, but 911 is not a
toy.
Is not a toy. So make sure to only use it when you're in a real emergency. And I was like, okay, I'm 4.
Brilliant.
Oh, man. Brian, were you finished with your history of video games?
Then, I guess, when I got my GameCube, I bought it with my own money. So that was cool.
I've been there.
I saved up all my allowances and I bought it.
How long did it take you?
Oh, gosh.
Like years in kiddom?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the first game I got with it, too. Ugh, what a heartbreak. Star Fox Adventures.
Is that really bad?
Oh, so bad. It was so bad. Star Fox didn't even really get in a ship. He had a dinosaur follow him around. And it was...
What?
It was terrible.
Okay.
It was
okay,
so
okay.
bad.
Let me put it like...
I don't think I beat it because I was just like, I hate this game.
Oh,
and
man.
I was like 12. I don't know.
It was kind of a fall from grace for the developers. Meredith, it's like, let me try and put it this way. When they first put Star Fox out, it was a great game. Like, it was a giant step forward in video gaming technology. And then the next Star Fox game that they made was Star Fox 64, which I think might be
awesome.
It might be a contender for the definitive video game for the Nintendo 64. Like, if somebody had a gun to your head and was like, you need to play this many games, like, or these games for the Nintendo 64, like, you definitely play Star Fox 64.
I find it odd. Like, I'm imagining a scenario where someone actually pulls a gun on you to make you play video games.
But usually when someone pulls a gun on you, they want to make you do something you don't want to do. Right? You just be like, okay, yeah, sure. Keep that gun on me. I'm not stopping.
But moving on.
But then for that same year for Christmas, I got Super Smash Bros. Melee, and it was so much better.
Good, yes.
Oh, and then you start getting Christmas present video games. So, mm-hmm.
my folks accepted me at that point. Then they're like, okay, Brian can play video games.
You came out as a video game player.
So,
well, they were like, I guess if he's gonna buy it with his own money, like, one thing my parents refused to get me, like, that I had to buy with my own money if I wanted, was a lava lamp.
Oh, but that's fun too. You could stare at that for hours, just like you could play video games
for hours. Exactly. And they were like, in the 60s, people smoked pot and stared at this. So we're not buying you one. If you want one, you have to buy it yourself. And I was like, fine. I think it was like $40 or something. So I saved up my allowance.
Worth it.
Nice.
Bought it.
To go back to Star Fox, anticipation was ripe for this new Star Fox game, and they came out with it, and nothing about Star Fox worked in this game.
You used to ran around with a staff with a blue crystal on it, and I was like, where's my starship? Please.
Yeah, you played as this like guy in charge of a ragtag group of starfighters, and you were like flying through asteroid fields, and it was fast paced and it was awesome. Now you're on this dinosaur planet, not in your ship, and with this really annoying dinosaur side.
And Slippy's not even there.
I mean, who really needs Slippy?
I need Slippy.
Look deep inside yourself.
He's there. He's been there all along.
I love it. But do you want to get a lava lamp for the house?
I mean...
Yeah, and then we can smoke pot and just watch it.
I kind of want one now.
Christmas is coming.
Mine eventually broke, but like, I kind of want a lava lamp again. I don't know.
You know what? I've got like two extra smart plugs that we bought from the pack that we bought last time.
We could have it come on automatically with the lady robot.
Yeah.
You guys got a lady robot?
Its name is Alexa.
Oh.
Yeah. And she controls all of the lights in our home.
Oh, I know what that spells.
So.
But if we mention her, then she'll try and do stuff.
She'll buy things for you.
We don't want her in the podcast.
No. Anyway. Speaking of podcasts, we should probably get back into our...
I suppose.
Unless, Brian, you want to talk about your video game history more.
Then I got a PlayStation 2, then a PlayStation 3, then a PlayStation 4.
Okay.
Then I went back to Nintendo with the Switch, and now I have a PlayStation 5.
Damn.
I kind of got on the PlayStation bandwagon.
I mean, that's understandable. I'm going to judge you from afar, but yeah, I get it.
Well, it's okay because we live from afar, so. If you judged me right next to me, I'd be a little creeped out.
All the judging must be from afar.
So with that, I think it's best that we get into our topic for today.
I'm ready.
Brian, I know you're from a small town, Midwestern town.
Yep.
So I just want to say.
Is this Footloose the video game?
Not quite.
Oh, dang.
But I just want to say, I've written this book report. If you have a question or you want to say something, go ahead and interrupt me. I know that small town Midwestern boys such as yourself sometimes have a difficulty interrupting people, but I want you to fight that deep within your heart because that kind of thing really drives this show. So,
okay. I wrote a note to interrupt you every 15 seconds.
Please do. So here we go. Zero Wing is a side-scrolling space shooter developed by Japanese company Taoplan and published by Namco in Japan in 1989 and by Williams Entertainment in North America in 1990. The game takes place in the distant year of 2101 AD.
It's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
80 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's as far as the 1940s.
One of us might be alive.
It's probably gonna be you. Yeah.
Because I'm planning on killing Dean.
No!
No,
you're not very healthy, is what I think Brian's trying to say.
The United Nations has signed a peace treaty with the villainous alien cyborg cats.
Uh-oh. Are they kitty cats?
Is that an acronym?
The name is in all caps.
Oh, what do you think it stands for?
I don't
know. What kind of
is it
robot?
With a K would... or a C?
It's a C.
Is there a Z at the end or an S?
It's an S. So I'm going to say it's cybernetic alien tactical sentience.
They're like ships, right?
No, it's a single dude.
Oh, okay.
But they don't. They are not cats.
No,
but they're not cats.
Cats is not a cat. Cat is an alien cyborg that looks mostly human, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
The United Nations has signed a peace treaty with the villainous alien cyborg cats. Shortly thereafter, cats breaks the treaty and attacks a Japanese space colony. The player assumes the role of Trent, a fighter pilot who narrowly escapes cats' invasion.
Hang on, is Trent... That's Japanese?
That's an amazing character name. Yo, I'm Trent. I'm going to take down cats.
I'm Trent from Japan.
The player assumes the role of Trent, a fighter pilot who narrowly escapes cat's invasion utilizing a Zig fighter craft. Left with little other option, Trent single-handedly intercepts cat's space armada to save the universe from his treacherous grasp.
He intercepts an entire armada with his one little zip.
Yep.
Zip.
Zig. So. Z-I-G as in
golf. Oh, Zig. Sorry. I find this hard to believe, but we're in fantasy land, so we're cool.
No, we're not. We're in historical fiction. This happens in in 80 years from now.
Right. I might still be alive.
Yeah.
Drinking martinis and watching the light show from my porch.
You'll still have your lava lamp.
Oh, my lava lamp.
By the way, we were sitting on our back porch last night enjoying a drink and the unusually warm weather, and we saw a trail of lights.
You saw the Starlink thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And Dean's like, I don't know. And I'm like, what is it? And Invasion. I took out my phone to record it because I was like, either it's Santa and he's a little early or
yes,
aliens.
Please. I have my stocking ready for him.
You've had it ready for a year.
But, it was cats.
But yeah, Dean found this morning, he found an article, like apparently a whole shit ton of people were calling news stations being like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
And it was Elon Musk.
Of course it was.
That's some white man ambition right up there.
It's Saturday.
Yeah.
You leave from Cape Canaveral and you let everyone know.
I think we just have to assume if we're looking up in the stars at night, it's either going to be Bezos or Musk. That's like, all it's going to be.
This is fine, but can they not just let everyone know? I don't know. We digress.
Getting back into the topic at hand. As shoot 'em ups go, Zero Wing is fairly standard fare. Piloting the Zig spacecraft, the player can move about the screen and fight off oncoming enemies.
Can he only zig or can he also zag?
I don't know.
Ooh, that's a question. Can he jump?
No.
Oh, no, he can't zag then. He can only zig.
Oh, yeah. This is disappointing.
Depending on in-stage items, the Zig has three distinct types of attack. Standard red shots, a blue laser, and green homing missiles. Additionally, the Zig has grappling arms, which allows it to grab certain enemies and either use them as shields or throw them at other enemies. It taking damage from enemy fire or colliding with enemies or solid terrain results in the player losing a life. Each stage culminates in a boss fight against a powerful servant of cats.
Mm. Mice.
I was going to say, do any of them even remotely resemble felines?
Damn it.
Okay, so I'm picturing this game in my brain.
Yeah.
It's a side-scroller. Is it like a Mario side-scroller where, like, once you move, you can't go backwards? Is it a constant...
I think it's an auto-scroller in that you are constantly moving forward no matter what you do.
Gotcha.
Zero Wing was initially not intended for commercial release. It was instead meant as a training exercise for new developers on Tauplan's staff. According to the game's main programmers, Hiroaki Furukawa and Tatsuya Uemura, this resulted in many ideas being cobbled together from the new programmers, resulting in a sort of development battle royale.
They made a Chimera game.
Ooh. A little bit. There was a lot of people being like, you know what would be cool? This. Yeah, but you know what? This is cool too. Why don't we put it in the same game? Because that always works out.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen, hey.
A little bit.
Eventually, the game was greenlit for release and met with generally positive critical feedback. The November 1989 issue of Game Machine magazine in Japan listed it as the fourth most successful table arcade unit that month. Computer and Video Game magazine gave it a 93%, praising its, quote, super smooth gameplay, beautifully designed graphics, rockin' soundtrack, amazing explosions, and incredible end-of-stage bosses.
Here's a question, Dean.
What's up?
How important is an incredible soundtrack to a video game?
Oh, Dean Spotify's this shit.
This is right up your alley, right?
I'm a little bit biased, but I feel like it...
Make or break.
It's usually really important.
Yeah.
Take a game like Chrono Trigger, for example.
Which I'm just going to interject. We had Chrono Trigger songs in our wedding.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you did. No, we had a Chrono Cross song.
Oh.
Ooh.
I'm going to sit back down.
Okay. Please do. But a lot of what that
game... We did
game...
have a Zelda song in our wedding.
Did we?
Didn't you dance to your mom with...
No, that was from Final Fantasy. Oh, I was really pissed.
Which one?
Aerith's theme.
Mm. But I sent a really nice piano arrangement to the DJ, and he used the From the Game version instead, so I felt like a giant asshole.
His mom was smiling beatifically and no one else noticed.
I mean, it's a son and mother dancing on a wedding day. No one's going to be mad.
Dean was mad.
There are not many. I feel like I'm a pretty slow to anger guy, and there are not many moments in my life where I was absolutely furious. This is one of those moments.
Like, you can see it in the pictures. So mad. His mom's like smiling and Dean's like.
Anyway.
Sorry, we digress yet again.
Let's see. It was praising it for its super smooth gameplay, beautifully designed graphics, rockin' soundtrack, amazing explosions.
I have a question, though.
What's up?
If the game is terrible, will a good soundtrack save it?
Ooh.
It depends on what you mean.
So, like that Star Fox thing you guys were talking about. If it had, like, a fantastic soundtrack.
I don't think it could have saved it.
No. That being said, the soundtrack for the first game is awesome. And the guy who wrote it, like afterwards, he got a really big head and actually tried to start his own video game company. And they only put out like one game for the PlayStation. It wasn't that great. And so they didn't make games anymore. But anyway, but it's a fantastic soundtrack. Going back to Zero Wing's critical reception. Super smooth gameplay, beautifully designed graphics, rocket
great explosions,
amazing explosions, and incredible end of stage bosses. Sega Force magazine, however, only awarded it 86%, concluding that it's
still a quote, B.
Almost as good as similar space shoot 'em up Hellfire, but not quite.
I don't know anything about Hellfire.
However, Zero Wing's lasting impact had nothing to do with its gameplay, soundtrack, or graphics.
What?
It's mostly known for its poorly translated opening sequence where Katz attacks the Japanese space colony.
Oh no, hold on, belongs to us.
Is that where this comes from?
Oh my god. So, this is one thing that I know.
This is amazing.
So we're all actors here. So I've typed up this
hell
sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, are we gonna read the thing?
Yes, we are.
Oh, I can't wait. Who do I get to play?
Okay.
I get to be Katz.
Heck yep. Yeah.
Yep. Pretty much I'm everybody except the captain or Katz. Brian, you will be playing the role of captain, and Meredith, you will be playing the role of Katz.
I am excited.
I love it.
I love how you used my full name in the casting list. like we were going to be confused.
It's your stage name, right?
It is actually my stage name, yeah. So I'm actually trying to decide if it will be my writer's name as well.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Let's jump into it.
I'm ready.
Scene. We see a red ship floating in the endless reaches of space. In AD 2101, war was beginning. An explosion. We see chaos on the bridge as the crew scrambles to recover from the blast.
What happened?
Somebody set up bust the bomb! We get signal!
What?
Main screen turn on! A hologram of cats appears.
It's you!
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us. You are on the way to destruction.
What you say?
You have no chance to survive. Make your time. Ha 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 ha.
The hologram cuts out, leaving Katz's laughter echoing through the bridge. Captain!
Take off every zig!
The scene switches to Trent, readying his zig fighter in the cockpilot.
You know what you doing? Move zig for great justice! I love it.
End scene.
I love it. It's amazing.
Pull back the curtain a little bit. I messaged both Meredith and Brian, and I was like, chances are you know what this is. And if I've done my job right, you won't know until we start reading what this is about, until you know what it's about.
It's amazing.
I still do all your base or belong to us to people like who like have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about.
I didn't know it was this game based on the title of the game, but when you said the opening translation was terrible.
Yes, that's when I knew.
Exactly what you meant.
Yep.
Yes. Oh my God.
Amazing.
In a 2010 interview, programmer Tatsuya Uemura and composer Masahiro Yuge stated that the opening sequence's poor translation was the result of the member of Tau Plan's staff who handled export and overseas business.
Well, they didn't have Google Translate back then.
I'm not sure that Google Translate would help things. If you actually look up All Your Base or Belong to Us on Wikipedia, they actually give you like a side-by-side translation.
Oh, yeah? And?
Like, and I took it and I put it into Google Translate. And it was it was a little better than what ended up happening, but not much. Starting in 2000, an animated GIF of the opening began circulating around the Something Awful forums, where it was picked up by a Kansas City programmer, part-time disc jockey, and member of the band The Laziest Men on Mars.
Okay.
Jeffrey Ray Roberts.
All right.
Roberts.
We have the same middle name.
His is R-A-Y and yours is R-A-E.
Because I'm a girl and he's a boy.
Let's not get into gender roles here.
I mean, but it's true.
Roberts then remixed Yuge's score, creating a song called Invasion of the Gabber Robots, which prominently features the phrase, all your base are belong to us. Gabber is a subgenre of hardcore techno music characterized by fast beats, distorted and heavier kick drums, and darker themes and samples.
I might like it.
Not to get too far away from things, but when I was looking stuff up for this episode,
we tangent.
The official...
Y'all tangential.
We do.
The Wikipedia article referred to it as a meme, but...
Memes were not invented.
That was total proto-meme, right?
That's exactly the phrase I was going to use, proto-meme.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely went viral, which we'll get into in just a bit, but it wasn't like... It was
We didn't have the equipment for it to become a meme. We didn't have the internets.
Yes.
We had the words of mouths.
We wrote letters to people.
We and did.
Beats.
Dude, I wrote letters to people even up into the late 90s.
I don't even write letters to my landlord anymore.
I used to write.
You just send them the check.
I just send them the check.
I used to send the last person I wrote letters to, I used to send chunks of photographs to my grandma and I would write on the backs of the photographs what was happening.
That's pretty good.
It was really cute. And when she died, they gave me all the photo albums back.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. But then I had this rift in my life where I have no one to send letters to anymore.
Oh, hey, it's wintertime. Do people still send letters to Santa or does he get tweets now?
Who the fuck knows? Probably he's gone all millennial as well.
Paperless.
What
Santa.
Generation is seeing? It's like, so Gen Z is too old for Santa, right? So what generation are we in that's like?
I'm going to be honest with you. I still get presents from Santa. So, you know.
I mean, so do I. And I'm in my 40s, but.
ain't nobody too old for Santa.
Yeah.
But you don't write letters to Santa. Okay,
nope,
never mind.
Nope, I do not.
Okay. I'm going to say, what's the generation right now that's little kids that are like having magic in their lives about Santa? Or please don't tell me that's been killed by the virus as well.
Do they have a generational name yet? Aren't they within like the Zoomer category?
Every year, Santa slips into your Amazon DMs. And finds out what you want for Christmas.
Like, seriously, I feel like kids would be sending Santa their Amazon wish list at this point.
Only if Santa's checking out my OnlyFans page.
Oh my God!
No, Santa's not getting you a crocodile dildo.
Oh my God! Oh, no.
Santa, you've been very naughty this year.
Oh, no.
Here's a toy train so you can get trained on your live stream.
We need okay, enough. Ooh, woo!
Mm.
Oh, it's got a little steamy in there.
Fan myself.
You gotta only fan yourself.
Okay. All right. Moving on. What were you saying? I don't even remember what you sang. My brain melted.
We were talking about how Gabber music is characterized.
Oh, well, that was like 10 years ago that we were talking about that. Okay. So
why is it called Gabber?
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
I don't know. I know that it is credited as originating in Rotterdam.
Okay.
But that's about it. Since the remix's release, the phrase has cemented itself in internet vernacular, appearing in numerous forms of media and publicity stunts, such as, on April 1st, 2003, 7 people placed signs with the phrase, "You have no chance to survive, make your time," throughout Sturgis, Michigan.
Amazing.
Whoa.
While the group claimed it was an April Fool's joke, most people who saw the signs were unfamiliar with the phrase and grew concerned, especially considering the fact that America was at war with Iraq at the time.
My God.
Oh, no.
Sturgis Police Chief Eugene Alley argued that the signs were, quote, a borderline terrorist threat, depending on what someone interprets it to mean, end quote.
Oh, no.
In February of 2004, North Carolina State University students exploited a web-based service to report weather-related closures to display the phrase in a news ticker on a broadcast of News 14 Carolina.
That's amazing. Kind of funny. Yeah. That's amazing. Now what I want to see, because now we have the like wear your seatbelt, click your ticket signs on the interstate. I want them to say all your base belong to us now.
That would be hilarious.
I do want to see an updated version of the video that we just saw and nobody listening just saw. just like, because that was made in like, what was it? That was made in 2000. That was 21 years ago.
Oh my God.
We need an update. Dean, this is now your new project.
There you go.
I don't know if I'm up to the task.
Wow. That, you know what? That was almost 22 years ago.
Would it have to be on TikTok now, though?
Oh,
it would have to take it off of YouTube and put the updated one on TikTok.
It might be too long for TikTok.
Oh, it's definitely too long for TikTok, but you'd have to do it like you'd have to do the first one and then that one would go viral and then you just have to make more.
Yeah.
So that all your followers are belong to us. All your followers. All your followers just like want the same meme.
We'll get there.
I have a friend who went viral on TikTok for hot sauce.
Awesome.
I know. What? She has like 20, she has, I don't know, 200,000 million followers. She has a shit ton of followers now. And she's like now like Frank's Hot Sauce's official like social media influencer. And now Michael's and Joanne's, the fabric stores, are fighting over her now. She's got a new war happening because she was going to dress up her big hot sauce bottle for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And they're both sending her shit to like dress them up. And I'm like, please give me some free yarn.
Yeah. Please give me some free hot sauce.
She's like, she's like, I just am trying to get car companies to fight over me.
Yes, that's the new dream.
So yeah, that's just what you need to do with this, Dean. Create a TikTok page for all your base or belong to us, or maybe create an opening stage VGH TikTok and then just start with this.
I don't know if I'm young enough to do that.
Hey, age is not the button number.
TikTok needs to get off my lawn.
Hey.
Anyway, on TikTok's
addictive.
On June 1st, 2006, YouTube, still in its infancy, was taken down for
because routine. It was made in 2005, as we discovered in the last episode.
Dang.
Which you might have to listen to that episode.
April, I believe, if memory serves.
On June 1st of 2006, YouTube, still in its infancy, was taken down for routine maintenance. The phrase, "all your video are belong to us," was shown below YouTube's logo after some patrons expressed concerns that YouTube
they stole my videos
had been hacked. The website added the phrase, "No, we haven't been hacked. Get a sense of humor."
Oh, man. I do kind of miss the irreverence of the internet, like in those early days.
Yeah.
Because, like, you could just say things like that and no one was going to get sued.
It's like if everybody had Wendy's Twitter's personality.
I love Wendy's Twitter and Denny's Twitter. Holy shit, Denny's Twitter.
Good times.
Let me see if I can find this.
Okay.
Also in 2006, a Chicago Fox News report about the phrase was aired, with Inside.com's Greg Lindsay comparing the phrase to "what's up" from Budweiser commercials.
You know, that's how I greet all my friends now, you know, is "all your best belong to us."
I don't remember this Budweiser commercial thing.
Oh, you don't remember, like, "what's up"?
You don't?
No, I don't.
All right.
I remember the frogs, Bud.
Ooh, flies. This was like after the frogs.
Why don't I remember this? Maybe I wasn't paying. I hated Budweiser for my whole life, so I've got that going for me.
I mean,
I like the Clydesdales.
And that's fun.
It's the king of beers. Sponsor my TikTok.
And now a story that'll make no sense whatsoever. Is it zero zilch? But here it is. There's a new phrase creeping into our language from the internet. And it goes like this. "All your base are belong to us." Now, you didn't hear me wrong.
Lipstick.
It goes, "all your base are belong to us." Fox's Rick Fulbaum tries to explain what this means.
It's so cool a phrase, even the president is using it. Or is
Are you
he?
Kidding me?
"All your base are belong to us." Don't ask what it means. Don't ask where it came from. Just accept it as one of those things that's got a lot of people talking. Still confused? Look on the web. It's everywhere. "All your base are belong
Look
to us"
Netscape.
On Uncle Sam, on
Netscape
Bill Gates,
web browser.
On t-shirts, billboards. Come on, say it. Everybody else is.
"All your base are belong to us" is the web equivalent of people watching Budweiser commercials and going around and saying "what's up" to everyone. It's the exact same concept.
The saying actually comes from a popular Japanese video game that was out on the market about 10 years ago called Zero Wing. In a rush to get that game released in this country, the Japanese was translated into English, bad grammar and all.
"Log Captain, someone set up Octobod. We get to log. Main screen, turn on. It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us."
Someone even made a song out of it.
Your days.
Oh, because this is the same time we're
You'd think there must be some company out there that would just love to capitalize on it, right?
If it were an ad, if it were, you know, if it, you know, Nike, "all your base are belong to us" and had the swoosh on it, it wouldn't be nearly as appealing. People wouldn't want it.
But they want it now. It's one
I
of the
feel
most
like people would still want it
web.
If Nike had
it. Though, like most underground trends, now that "all your base are belong to us" has hit mainstream, its coolness might be over soon. In New York, Rick Fulbaum, Fox News.
Okay, results from tonight's Voice of Choice survey are just ahead.
"But all your sports come from Dan."
It would have been cooler if he'd said, "all your sports belong to Dan."
That's exactly what he said.
It's no, he didn't.
Because whenever, like, overly white news outlets report on something like this.
They're so hip.
Yeah. All right. And lastly, most recently, on January 19th, 2019, American Congresswoman Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York.
Love her.
Tweeted, "all your base are belong to us. R being in parentheses, in response to a poll which indicated that 45% of Republicans who were polled approved of her suggested implementation of a 70% marginal tax rate for individuals making $10 million or more a year.
I mean, come on.
That just makes sense.
I mean, come on.
Indeed. So that is the story of All Your Base Are Belong to Us.
I love it.
I'm going to, like, I don't want to, but I'm a little hung up on, like, the tax thing. I feel like.
I mean, like, definitely make the rich pay what they owe, but.
This is the thing, though. Like, having recently experienced a tiny jump in income, nowhere near that much, but, like, a jump to make myself be like, oh, my tire is flat. And I can pay for this without, like, worrying about where things are coming from and what I'm going to have to cut in order to pay for this flat tire. Like, just that much has led me to, like, a mental shift in, like, what I can afford to give to others. For instance, if I'm out, I'm like, I should absolutely tip this person all of this money because they have done a great job and I can afford it. So I just feel like if you're making $100 million a year or whatever it was, what was it?
10 million, I think it was. So yes, even, $10 million or more a year.
So if you're making $10 million or more a year, I don't care what you've done to make it.
I mean, do you remember when millionaires used to build libraries and theaters and stuff instead of rockets to go to outer space?
Yeah. You know, he could like give some money to NASA or maybe get involved there. But no, he's got to do it him damn self because he wants his name on it. And like,
I like how the episode about a poorly translated opening has turned up into a progressive calling card.
I was hesitant on saying anything, but that was what you ended with, and I was just like, it just like stuck in my craw. I had to get it out.
I'm, like I said, I'm not against it. I just think it's funny.
Also, I've had vodka, which is something I don't normally have.
Dang. I have Bullet in here.
Ooh. Yeah. I have a Bullet around. T-shirt because we went to the Bullet distillery once.
Oh, dang.
Dean left Pokemon at a battle station there.
I was like playing. Okay. I was
7 days.
I was still playing Pokemon Go by that point when we went there. And like, it was the like only Pokemon gym.
I mean,
probably
and we're talking
for like 25 mile radius.
This was the only thing in a 25 mile radius. So like, people didn't go out there often.
I left a Kingler there and it stayed there for about a week and a half.
Until you went back to get it.
No.
No, like it got returned. We went back to Chicago at the time we were living there. And like it
so I was like,
got
this
returned.
Kingler is like 7 states away.
He can't find his way home.
But did you get a lot of points or something for that?
I think I did. I don't play Pokemon Go anymore because like I was like, is this really what I want to spend my life on?
Well, this is a good segue. This wraps up my history with video games then.
Okay. I'm ready.
From the very beginning of this episode, for Christmas this year, I am gifting my nephews, 7 and 9, 2 old Game Boys and 4 Pokemon games. So
aww.
I'm starting them out.
You're doing God's work.
I'm doing God's work.
Just make sure they start off with Charmander.
One can, leaf green is going with.
No, 2 will.
Dean?
Well,
Dean.
Only one gets leaf green. Only one gets leaf green.
Yeah, but Dean. they can.
Dean, they not can, everyone is you.
They can share the cartridge.
Everyone's journey is not the
they
same.
They can share the cartridge.
Yeah.
Everyone's
journey is not the same.
I remember
everyone's journey will be the same.
When Dean
all your journeys
was,
belong to Dean
was so passionate
belong to me.
Was so passionate about Charmander being the his first Pokemon that his mom yelled at him that there were starving kids in Africa.
I don't know if we we did talk about this on the Echo of the Dolphin episode which
if you're listening and you haven't gone back to that episode.
That's the episode I talked about earlier too.
Yeah,
it's a pretty whacked out episode.
It definitely goes into left field.
Worth it.
But
worth listening.
One of the more sane things is about how I got into an argument with my then roommate Joe Ramsky about
you're moving at the time.
I was moving into the place.
Yeah,
and my then roommate Joe Ramsky, we briefly talked about Pokemon and what starting Pokemon. And the argument grew very heated.
Because, you know, they were grown men at this time.
Yeah.
And they're like mid-20s.
Yes.
May or may not have been 25. But I was moving in and my parents... My mother was helping me very graciously move in, and I grew very passionate about starting with Charmander. And my mom was like, you know, there are starving children in Africa and China that could really use this kind of passion instead of what Pokemon you start with Charmander. And I was like, you fucking start and you have to like work. You have to put in the work when and you be a grown ass man. With Charmander! But if you get Bulbasaur and Squirtle, you're like, oh, I don't give a fuck. I just want to, like, breeze through the first two gyms, fucking Misty and Brock. Who gives a shit?
And your mom was correct.
I may or may not have proved my mom's point, but... Anyway, I think we should probably start wrapping this up.
Shame.
Stop it. Meredith. Well, no, not Meredith. Brian.
Meredith.
That's me.
Brian, is there anything that you'd like to plug before we end today's episode?
Anything I want to plug?
Anything.
Like, are you working on any endeavors that you would like the public to check out if they wish to know more about you?
No.
He's a quiet little Linda.
I wish I had things that I could be passionate about that people could watch or listen to. But I play video games every day at my house. If y'all want to come over sometime and play video games with me, I'm totally down for that. I can cook a good meal.
No,
I like
can.
Long walks on the beach. yeah. Come on over and we can plug stuff together.
Meredith, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
I am still blogging away at meredithraylyons.com/faster. And I'm actually thinking that the time may have come for me to put a little page on my website for this podcast. So
I would very much appreciate that.
I think that might be happening soon.
All right.
Heck yeah.
Well, if you would like to get a hold of us, there's a number of ways that you can do that.
I have their cell phone numbers. You just reach out to me. I can get them to you.
Hey, stop. Stop. You can send us
Twitter.
Yep, we do have a Twitter @StageVGH.
Get on there and tell us how we need a TikTok.
Yeah, please. you can also send us an email at openingstagevgh@gmail.com. I think that's about it right now. I kind of let the Facebook slide out because I got rid of my Facebook.
Instagram?
Yeah.
Do you have an Instagram, babe?
I don't. I should probably do that. So keep an eye out for that as well. But yeah, Brian, thank you again so much for joining us. I hope you had a good time.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
All right. This is Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
What happened?
Someone set up Azkaban. We get signal.
What?
Main screen turn on.
It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us. You are on the way to destruction.
What you say?
You have no chance to survive, made your time. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, as far as the volleyball team goes, as far as me on the volleyball team goes, let me put it in context of what video game history.
Okay.
So Capcom in the late 90s made a fighting game for Marvel called X-Men: Children of the Atom.
Okay.
And to kind of test out the game that they were making, they put Akuma from Street Fighter in there as like a secret character.
Okay.
The thing about it though is like Akuma's like a regular ass dude. Like he can throw fireballs, but that's about it.
Yeah, because regular ass dudes throw fireballs all the time.
Well, I mean, but the thing. The thing is he's going up against the X-Men and their respective foes. So, like, Akuma...
I'm sure. Hold on. I'm sure there's going to be an X-Man who throws fire. Let's just see. His name is Pyro. There you go. There's an X-Man named Pyro.
He's not an X-Man. He's with the... Oh, he kind of starts with the X-Men, but then he gets disenfranchised and joins the Brotherhood of Mutants.
But he's a mutant. I think is Brian's point.
Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is that, like, when they made the game, Akuma is like this shitty, like...
Wow, you burped right into the mic.
Can we check our levels on burps, please?
No, but the thing is, like, Akuma is by far the shittiest character in the game. It's cool that you can play as Akuma, but he's the worst character in the game. That's how I felt on the volleyball team. That's exactly how I felt.
Awesome.
I was Akuma going up against the X-Men.
But if you can win as Akuma, how good is that? That's gotta be great.
The cool thing about it, Brian, is that I haven't done anything I sucked at in a long time. And so it was nice to, like, get better every time.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you're terrible,
you can only go up.
Exactly. So I like, people were, like, literally cheering for me when I served the ball and it went over the net. It was like explosions. And when I, like, when I would hit, like, the first couple games when I would actually touch the ball and, like, hit it in a direction that was correct, everyone was like, yeah!
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
We'll do it again next year.
That sounds wonderful. All your days belong to us. All your days are